This is the State of Things broadcasting from the Triad Stage in downtown Greensboro. I'm Frank Stacio. Sylvia Gray was an entrepreneur of so-called stuff for six decades. It all started in 1937 when she and her husband opened a used furniture and army surplus store in downtown Greensboro. Many years later, the demand for surplus died down, and Sylvia turned to thrifting to keep the business alive. She took twice daily trips to the local Salvation Army and Goodwill and picked up whatever caught her eye, from toy cars to dried out pens and buttons, and she ran the thrift shop until the day before she died. A number of years after her death, her grandson decided to turn the abandoned store into an experimental art space and museum. It's now known as Elsewhere. For more than a decade, Elsewhere has provided space for artists from around the world to repurpose old things into new creative collaborations. And after months of renovations, the museum will officially reopen in September as a year-round museum with space for 12 live-in artists. Joining me now first is Elsewhere co-founder and director George Scheer. George, welcome back. Good to have you here.
Thanks, Frank.
So take us back a little bit. Tell us about your grandmother and the history of what came to be that three-story thrift shop.
Yeah, I mean, this has just been sort of a 60 years of accumulation of bolts and bolts of fabric, thousands of articles of clothing. I mean, more and more things coming in. We'd hear stories, if she liked you, it'd be cheap, and if she didn't like you, she wouldn't sell. And so I think over time, that process just led to more accumulation.
What did you find when you walked in there after she passed?
Oh, it was like foot aisleways. I mean, for me as a kid, it was always like a treasure trove, and you'd go in and you'd spend time and hours. I tried to sell hats, but coming back there, it was after she passed. It was foot aisleways through the entire space, knots and bags tied together, everything sort of in a peculiar but chaotic order.
When did it occur to you that this could be an art space?
The end of my senior year. I was at UPenn. I was a writer. I was exploring the role of writing in communities. And we came down on a spring break, and I told my co-founder, Stephanie, got to check out my grandmother's old store. It's been locked up for years. We took a box of things back, and the stuff, as it were, really changed the interaction. It made a performative character to our writing workshops. And then we thought, well, maybe there's something here.
So what was your first idea about what to do? Because there's a lot of stuff, one-foot aisles, there's a lot of work to be done here.
A lot of sorting, a lot of folding, putting things likes with likes and sorting through it, really.
The museum has been home to a number of innovative projects since then. Can you give us an idea of what sort of art projects that it has spawned?
Sure. We describe it now as a living museum, artist residency, and collaborative laboratory. We have about 50 artists a year that come from all over the world. We have a few special fellowship programs where we bring artists in. Southern Constellation has been going on for about 5 years, supported by the NEA.
Describe that project.
So that program brings together, we have about 70 nominators around the South. They select or nominate artists. The artists apply. We have about 6 artists, and they're creating works across media, responding often in case to a lot of political and social issues. The conversation, which also includes an exhibition as well as a convergence that will be happening in D.C., will be happening again in December at the National Museum, sort of explores the experimental conditions for creative practice in the South.
And you also had some other projects. I mean, a creative use of space when you were prohibited from being out on the sidewalk, you found a way to get around that rule.
Yes. So very early on, we were informed, and rightfully so, by the fire marshal, that we could not have assemblage inside our building, which is actually one of the things that is about to change now. But so we said, fine, we'll put our audiences outside. So we take out the front windows, and this is, and then have performances and events, and eventually the North Carolina Arts Council actually gave us a grant for a public art project that was to transform our front window into a stage. We now have swings, which are often referenced nationally as sort of a movement of creative placemaking and ways museums are actually adapting more closely with culture.
And as you predicted, in the way that your writers were stimulated and inspired by the stuff that they were surrounded by, so are other artists, and so there's some great projects. I think somebody got into the button collection, right?
Yes, and plenty of people have gotten into the button collection and been reorganizing and also rethreading. I mean, really, I think the great thing is that artists come without proposals, and they come into this unfolding artwork, and they step into this kind of world of layered things and works, and they respond to what they find. That's sort of a new way of creative practice.
And in a way, it was, you say that it was, maybe this is my word, curated by your grandmother, but in a sense, she was very particular about the stuff she picked up. It wasn't just anything that fit. It was stuff that suited her taste, right?
There's definitely a taste. I think that's what differentiates it. So you're finding, you're discovering sort of a hint of her character, and at the same time, you know, this 60 years of American overproduction and accumulation, you're kind of always connecting in, and the artists bring their ideas, their concepts, and they apply them into this this unfolding world.
So tell us what's new. What's new about what's happening to Elsewhere these days?
I mean, the really big thing is that after probably 3 years now of a capital campaign, including national funders, local funders, 300 people around the country, we have literally reinstalled the infrastructure. So she left about everything, including the kitchen sink, but no air conditioning, no HVAC, no proper coating. And so over years of sort of proof of concept, really, and then building a community, we've now been able to put in the infrastructure. So HVAC will actually allow us for year-round operation. We used to close in November, reopen in March. We'll now be open 12 months around the year. The museum will be fully active. Residents will be coming in. And the really exciting thing is that we will now have 12 living units for artists in downtown. So when you think about how do you build a creative community, and Greensboro is putting so much excitement, energy, and money into building and supporting the arts. Well, to support the arts, you have to support artists, and that means having available space for them in your downtown.
One of those visiting artists is with us now. Roger Miles is a sculpture and installation artist based in London. He is now here in Greensboro. Roger, welcome to the State of Things.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thank you.
Tell us about this. What drew you to Elsewhere?
Well, I was looking at a residency somewhere in the world, and this one stood out as being unique, not just because it was a thrift store, but because it was an individual sort of collection taste over the 60 years. And I'd not been to Carolina before, so I thought I'd apply.
So you've had a little time to poke around in there. What would you say about it? How has it inspired you?
Well, the last 3 days I've been up to my neck in vinyl records. Again, that's a really interesting collection of records. It's Sylvia Gray bought the records supposedly for her daughter's taste. Her daughter says she didn't always get it right, but it's interesting to just see what comes out of a more intensive investigation of that that collection. And I also want to sort of activate it and allow people to listen to their choices.
But that's a fairly interesting project, as you describe it. I mean, on the one hand, there's the kind of music it is, and then you have these artifacts, these discs, right? These vinyl discs, which, you know, as art pieces themselves can be hung as collage or mobiles or something. But the idea that also they're part of a genre of music offers some real possibilities, I guess.
And I think also the artwork itself on vinyl records is, you know, amazing. There's a whole collection of decayed record covers that, again, will make interesting artworks.
So do you have any ideas yet? Have things starting to gel for you?
I think so, but it's there's a lot of them to go through, so I'm still delving through.
Well, Elsewhere has been home to hundreds of artists over the past 13 years, and we're joined by a woman who has helped make the space into a living museum. Emily Ensminger completed her own residency at Elsewhere in 2011. She's now the museum's program coordinator. Emily, welcome to the State of Things. Nice to have you here as well.
Thank you.
Tell us a bit about your project or projects at Elsewhere.
When I was a resident in 2011, I had just finished school with a degree in visual and critical studies and also a degree in urban agriculture. So when I arrived at Elsewhere, I noticed that there was this sort of very narrow alleyway in the back, and artists spend a lot of time in the building. It's huge, but they also crave like a sort of natural space. And so I wanted to sort of transform the alleyway into using my experience as an urban agriculturalist into a vertical garden. So I took a scaffold that was in the building, kind of the scaffolds you see at Home Depot that hold all the things, and then put it outside and kind of increased the growing space. And it was basically covered in plants. And we now have a much larger yard that we share with our neighbors. But before that happened, it was just this vertical garden. And it was kind of a nice green area. And we would take all the herbs from the garden and use them in our kitchen commons, which is not a project that I built, but one that I helped thrive. It is in the museum. It's open to the public. The public's invited to go into our kitchen. It's not a private space. They're welcome to open drawers and see what's in the fridge. And so when I became a staff member, as soon as my residency ended, I became a staff member. And my primary job was overseeing the kitchen. So a lot of the projects that I did in that space were to encourage kind of good communal living practices. And so we have, a refrigerator theater where we, our fridge has got a glass face. So we encourage the residents to like curate the fridge itself. And then I also oversaw a lot of the other common areas.
Which encourages people to put the milk back, at
right,
the very least.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if that's part of a piece, you want it to be in the right place. Well, tell us more about that. I mean, that's an interesting idea, George, because this means it's going to be a living space so that it will hopefully inspire art projects, but the space itself is a work of art, right? So how are these folks going to be living together in this place?
Sure. I mean, I think from the very beginning, there was this concept of combining art and life as clearly and as fluid as we can. I mean, too much is done in the separation of exhibitions and performance and the museum and the artist and their studio. And so from the very beginning, I mean, this is a space we live in. It was created by an artist. It had been multiple iterations of it before. And eventually an artist, Morgan Pewitt, came in and created this thing like a performance. So you have this moment where you will be waking up in the morning, I guess, as an artist, and you'll come down, you'll be cooking breakfast, and then there'll be a group of school kids there watching you perform. And, they're surprised by you, you're surprised by them. People walk in, they walk in the front, and they say, is this a thrift store? And we say, no, it's a museum. And they say, okay. And they put their hands in their pockets, say, no, you're welcome to touch. And then they take their hands out of their pockets. And by the time they've gotten to the back of the building, they say, wait, is there a home here? There's people cooking. I don't understand. So, disrupting the whole normatives of art and life.
Roger, have you had experience with this kind of thing before? How unique is this in your experience?
I think it's pretty unique. I've had experience in sort of having a record store and people coming up to you all the time and choosing music, but sharing your breakfast or your dinner with the viewer is new to me.
How do you think, obviously you haven't started your project yet, but I mean, how do you think that would influence you as an artist sort of not working alone in the studio?
Well, I think there's two things. One, you're working with other artists, which is one of the things that attracted me here. So there's four other artists, they're all fantastically diverse and talented. And secondly, the feedback you get on a daily basis from the viewer, from the visitor, and the stories they're going to tell about the music they're choosing will move your project around. And it will become my experience is it becomes a very emotional experience as well.
George, you can see what influence this might have on, and then of course not foresee the kind of great influences this is going to have on artists. But what about the city? I mean, the idea that this is a kind of model for creative living and creative use of space.
Sure. I mean, I think that we imagine what a creative culture looks like, and we want to keep pushing that forward. It is one in which creatives and artists have access to different communities and resources, and that they have places to create, and you have sort of a vibrancy. I mean, what I hope is that what we imagined 13 years ago as we were starting, and downtown was sort of you could roll a bowling ball down the center, and the divestment that had happened for so many years in downtown Greensboro, that this would be an opportunity to sort of recharge how we imagine culture is. And so now that we're surrounded by co-working spaces and we have these beautiful new artworks and there's a new performing arts center, our challenge is even more great, which is to continue to push the critical edge of this culture, to continue to bring in different audiences, different groups, different social injustice services that are operating in our city, and to bring them into the cultural dialogue and to engage, really to engage them. It's not about us bringing them in, but to really engage with the community as it is and as it grows.
Well, and keeping yourself right in the middle of the things. I mean, talk to any city planner and they will say that keeping the creative class in your place is vital to attracting any kind of, particularly young people coming in. But if you want to grow, you need to have a creative class here, so that's one thing. But then not to work in your garret, to be in the middle of things and to be part of the process and part of that growing city is, I think, what is unique in this and what's happening in some of the cities in North Carolina, certainly in Greensboro.
Yeah, I think there's certainly, when we talk about a renaissance that's happening, I think it's happening in every city. And in December at Duke, we're going to be talking about hacking the renaissance, right? So how do we take control of that as creatives? How do we ensure that the spaces that are that as we transform space, we're making sure it's equitable and that we are not actually pricing ourselves out, let alone others. And so that, I think there's a lot of really interesting models. There's a lot of collective cooperative models around the South, for sure, and around our state. And so we're going to be talking about those issues as well.
Emily, you've done a lot of interesting installations and have allowed your work, and you have a background in hospitality as well.
Yeah.
How has that influenced? Because I know you've got an interest. For instance, a bathroom project. That's kind of interesting.
That is actually, there's an artist who's currently in the space. Janelle Beasley is working on a project in the bathroom. To kind of transform it to be a reflective area. And so...
Are we going to have to show our birth certificate to get in? Because, you know, that could be a problem.
No, it's... Yeah, it'll be in the museum. We consider common areas, the kitchen, and also the bathroom, a space for artists to transform and look at those areas and be critical of those spaces. Janelle's working through ideas right now, but definitely it will be done by the end of, I don't know the exact date, but yeah, people should come in and see her working on the project.
That sounds fantastic. You're going to, but as I said, you do have experience in the hospitality industry. How does that inform your work?
Yeah, so I became the hospitality curator, and so I was thinking about service industry positions and thinking of them as a sort of invisible labor that wasn't, you know, getting a lot of recognition in residencies and in other spaces. So janitorial work, kitchen work, you know, farming, all of these sort of hospitality, homesteading kind of roles. So at Elsewhere, I was really focused on, as a staff member, my own art practice, which was focused on hospitality. And I just wanted to kind of create spaces that highlighted those that kind of labor.
Well, George, I think that's where having a functional house in the middle of a city act as both living space and art space is important, because the political idea is to have an HB2 inspired installation, which is also a bathroom fundamental to every, you know, it's plumbing in the end, but it's also a political issue. This is the way artists can talk about this in ways that sometimes politicians can't.
Yeah, I mean, it's a stunning and horrifying prospect of what's happened in our state, but you know, artists have been drawn to respond to it. You know, I think the real there are those issues, and artists are responding. We have, I mean, you know, code required that we added 3 new bathrooms in, so we're they're brand new and they're untouched, and they're certainly gender neutral, but they can be pushed further to be responsive to these issues. But I think the real critical issue is how you take a store and you decide it's not for sale, and then you transform it into something else, and you place that right in the middle of downtown, and then also show that their lives are creative lives, right? And that's how we understand, that's how culture grows, is by that process.
And you're living in a community, Greensboro, that is open and receptive to this kind of art and cultural expression.
Yeah, people have been very receptive. And I mean, you know, it's essentially a collective communal style house in the middle of downtown. It hopefully introduces people to something that they've never seen before in a caring, hospitable, loving way, in which we have folks from very far away who are coming to be part of our community for a moment.
George Scheer is the co-founder and director of Elsewhere Museum in Greensboro. Roger Miles, a London-based artist currently pursuing an artist residency at Elsewhere. And Emily Ensminger, the program coordinator at Elsewhere. Thank you for being on the program. Elsewhere celebrates its grand reopening Saturday, September 17th. All day Ferris wheel, all night party and performances. We have the information at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, musician Andy Eversole tells us about his quest to become the Anthony Bourdain of the banjo. Hear a sample now, and we'll be right back.